Hello, friends. Welcome to this week's episode of the Gospel Beautiful podcast. This week's conversation is with Brian Schrader, who is the social media specialist and emerging worship coordinator at Lord of Life, a Lutheran church in Maple Grove, Minnesota. So not too far from us. That's a fabulous congregation, by the way. There's some really, really great people on their staff and in the ranks of their congregation. So anyways, this week's conversation is with Brian. He, in addition to his duties out at Lord of Life, he also runs a blog called worshipforward.blog. In fact, right after this introduction that I'm giving right now, you will hear a brief advertisement spot for Worship Forward, because Worship Forward and Brian are going to be sponsoring the podcast. In fact, the new kind of picture icon, cover icon, whatever you call it, for Gospel Beautiful was designed by Brian. So many thanks to him for the good work there. It took us a little bit of time just to kind of find something that we felt kind of captured the personality of the podcast, but I think we landed on it and he did a really nice job of designing it. So obviously Brian's a man of many talents, but he also just has a remarkable story leading up to his current position at Lord of Life. And he is doing what I think are some really interesting things with worship. If you go to worshipforward.blog, you'll see that it's titled a Resource for Progressive Innovative Worship Leaders. And Brian is a fabulous musician, a deep thinker when it comes to creating worship experiences. And in so many ways, I feel like he's trying to just develop some innovative worship resources and he's kind of found a niche of people that might be kind of interested in sort of the progressive aesthetic, or not progressive aesthetic, the contemporary music aesthetic, but they're not always as comfortable with maybe some of the theology. It maybe doesn't quite match the progressive values quite as much, or the Lutheran theological values quite as well. And so he has kind of situated himself in this space and is trying to provide a lot of really high value content for people who are like I said, really interested in maybe like the contemporary aesthetic and some of the music and the sound that comes out of it, but who are theologically maybe a little bit more progressive, or at the very least a little bit uncomfortable with some of the theological values that one often finds within contemporary music. So Brian's found an interesting little niche space there. I think he's thinking about these things really creatively and in a nuanced way. And I think you, the audience of Gospel Beautiful, are going to appreciate hearing from him, hearing a bit about his journey, which has involved a fair amount of pain, but also a fair amount of self-discovery and joy. And there's just a lot in this story. And I'm imagining that as Brian kind of develops these resources on Worship Forward, we'll definitely want to visit with him again in the future. So in any case, that's this week's episode. I hope you all enjoy it. As always, if you have guest recommendations for me, I would really love to hear them. We have got just an amazing lineup of guests coming up. I interviewed two people today, actually. One, I interviewed Brent Strawn, who is my doctor father. He's at Duke Divinity now. He teaches Old Testament there, and he has two great books on the Old Testament that we talk about. And the first one, let me grab it right here, is called The Old Testament is Dying, and just great book, really helpful. And then the other book that he wrote is Lies That Preachers Told Me, I think that's what it's called. Let me actually pull it up so I get the right. So I get the right title for you. It's coming out probably late 2020, early 21. Yeah, here's the, I just have the galleys, the sort of digital form of the book pre-publication, called Lies My Preacher Told Me, An Honest Look at the Old Testament. So these two books really take on some of the problems around the Old Testament, some of the challenging things that preachers and pastors and professors often face that are kind of specific to the Old Testament, or at the very least are misperceptions about the Old Testament. So that's a great interview. Next week we have, I'll be publishing Brian Blunt's interview, which is just really interesting. Brian Blunt is a very, very well-known preacher, seminary president, academic commentator on books like Revelation, He's just got great stuff on apocalyptic literature. I think you all are really going to enjoy that conversation with Brian. And then the second conversation I had today was with Air Force Captain Cliff Hansen, who is Cliff and I graduated from Luther Seminary together. He served several years in the parish as a civilian, and then only I think it was about a year ago, maybe a year and a month or so ago, he entered active duty Air Force as a chaplain. And so he's the first active duty military person that we've had on the podcast, but I had been hoping to get a chaplain on to talk with us about a whole range of different issues. And Cliff is, I could think of nobody better than Cliff to talk about some of those things. So just an awesome array of guests who are going to be on the show in the coming weeks. And then I guess the last one that I want to mention is my colleague Greg Carey has just published a book which has a fabulous title, and I'm going to pull it up right now so I don't mess up the title. But it's called Using Our Outside Voice: Public Biblical Interpretation. Greg is a fabulous New Testament scholar, awesome guy, just a really, really helpful author. And so we just got him booked for early June. He'll be, I'll be interviewing him in early June, and then it'll be published, you know, several weeks after all that, you know, the routine. So we have an awesome list of guests, but always looking for more. Especially it's helpful for me to hear who you want to hear from, because I, you know, I have my circle of contacts that's very limited, of course, considering the sort of breadth of global Christianity. And so I really would like to hear from you all and need your help in kind of developing and broadening the number of voices that we get to have on this podcast. So anyways, friends, enjoy the show. If you have recommendations, you can send those to chanspam82, that's the number 82, @gmail.com. One more time, it's chanspam82 @gmail.com. Enjoy the show.
Hey there, Gospel Beautiful podcast listeners. This is Brian Schrader, creator of Worship Forward, a resource for progressive, innovative worship leaders. Here you'll find conversations about arranging hymns for your worship band, using song lyrics that promote justice, and how to choose great worship songs to use at your church. Check it out at worshipforward.blog.
I'm Grace Allworth, co-owner of Studio 2 Ceramics of Northeast Minneapolis. We make small-batch pottery and teach low-pressure, casual classes with the goal of sharing the love of fun and creativity with our community. At Studio 2 Ceramics, we're committed to purchasing local supplies and using sustainable, earth-gentle practices whenever possible. Whether you're looking for a thoughtful gift, custom churchware, or a new favorite mug, Studio 2 Ceramics has something for you and something to share. Listeners of the Gospel Beautiful podcast receive 10% discount on all purchases. Visit our website, studio2ceramics.com, that's the number 2, and use the coupon code GOSPEL.
Brian Schrader, welcome to the show.
Good to see you. Thanks so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun conversation. So we are, maybe I'll describe the physical surroundings. We're on a nice, I don't know, moderate Minnesota morning at Lord of Life Lutheran Church in Maple Grove, Minnesota. And we're going to talk about your ministry here. We're going to talk about your story, which you talk quite a bit about on your blog and website, Worship Forward. So I'm really looking forward to it. I feel like, you know, the ELCA is having all these conversations right now, not just the ELCA, but like the mainline and churches, all these conversations about what it means to lead in this new and emerging age. And I'm not hearing enough conversations about what it means to lead worship in that space, like from a musician worship leader's vocation perspective. So I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on that.
Great. Yeah. I look, this is my world right now. So
What's your official title out here?
I am the emerging worship director.
Oh, they even use the term emerging worship
director. There was discussion about should we use this word? And it was like, this is what is happening here at Lord of Life. Yeah. So that's the title.
Well, let's start a bit with your own story, which I think is really interesting and compelling. You can kind of start it wherever you like, and then we'll see where it goes. But ultimately, be interested in hearing about your own evolution as a worship leader and that vocation. So,
sure. My experience in worship leading started with growing up in the Catholic Church.
I was in the choir starting at like 14, and I had a voice, and they let me use it. And so I got to lead a lot of, canterish things, and that was great. And I started writing music and playing music and learning from these kind of contemporary worship leaders of the time, you know, the Matt Redmans and the
right.
Chris Tomlins that just took the world by storm.
Sort of like late 90s, early aughts, yes. Early aughts, right?
All those.
And are still quite active.
Yeah,
the Tomlins
for better
and the Redmans
or worse.
Right.
That's where I started. And my teenage rebellion years was really just like a Protestant Reformation. I kind of started questioning a lot about the Catholic Church, and it led me away. And I noticed, especially within my little small town, that there was a lot of animosity between the denominations. And as someone who was writing music and releasing music and presenting them at all these different churches, I was like, these are church communities that I can find community in, regardless of the denomination. And I started a ministry at the end of high school that was a worship service that was weekly throughout the summers. And that's kind of where I cut my teeth at learning what it's like to lead a group of people in song.
Now, my understanding is that you play guitar, right? That's your primary?
Guitar, piano.
Now,
yeah.
You don't read music.
Correct.
Or you are learning to read music.
I'm learning
right?
to read
music. I didn't mean to diminish that at all. But.
No, I mean, I was, you know, I took the long way around the barn. It sounds fancier than it is, but it's I taught myself how to, I'm self-taught on piano and guitar. I took a few lessons, but I can't read music. And I play by ear, which...
Well, and often with contemporary... I used to lead worship as well on the guitar in college and in a little bit afterward. But I do read music, but I never had to in the worship context because you can sort of work with chords, right?
And, sure.
And, so that does make for an easier entry, I think, for people who... You know, might want to learn to lead worship. It's like, okay, you can do it with 8 chords, literally.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. And every band that I lead, I've always turned to notes as like a last resort. Like we rarely, even now, we rarely use any sheet music, and it's all chord charts. And that I think that gives us a chance to feel the music a little bit more than just present the music.
Oh, is that, you know, maybe because you're less focused on the details of, is this a half note or a quarter note? And it's more just like, okay, this is a very simple progression.
Yes.
I can do that. It gives you a little flexibility as a worship leader too.
Exactly. And for me, it allows the spirit to kind of take over sometimes if it has to. You know, it gives us a little bit, we're not stuck in the rigid what's written on the page, but if there's something that is pulling in one direction or another, we have a little bit more freedom to listen and feel that.
Well, let's go back to high school.
Yeah, I'm sorry,
we got a bit distracted about the technical stuff.
Yeah.
So you started this ministry after high school.
That was in high school, and it was, I put a band together, I led the music, and it was kind of this worship experience that is where we said, yo, we're not part of any sort of denomination, but we just want people to come together to worship. And you know what? We were in high school, and it was I shudder to think the things that I probably said on that stage or the ways that I led, but it's that's where I started my worship leading journey.
Yeah, remarkable. And does that organization still exist, or was it kind of tied to your own initiative? And
yeah, it was. Yeah. That was back then, and it's done. that's fine. That's where I discovered that I love being part of the way that people experience God, and being able to kind of curate an environment that allows people to experience God with as minimal distraction as possible. That's really important to
me. What do you think was happening there? Like, as you reflect back on it,
what did that, how were people reacting to that experience? What do you think the nature of that experience of God was for people? Even for yourself, like even if you look back and say, well, maybe I wouldn't quite experience God in that way. What was it sort of genuinely for you in that moment?
That's a great question. I think there was something subversive about kind of throwing away these denominational barriers. And I think there was also something about just people coming together it was like a Tuesday night or something, you know, and people coming together to just make space for this and try worship that doesn't look like what they were experiencing in their churches. And I think it's always worth assuming that people are spiritually hungry, you know?
Say more. That's such an interesting line. Say that. Yeah, more about that.
Well, I think it's better than assuming that they're not, you know? And I've just found that when I lean into that idea, we find, like, people have more, I lost myself. Hang on a second.
That's all right. No, take your time.
I think when we lean into that idea, we just give people an opportunity to be brave and explore that part of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I suppose there's much in our life that either you have to block that part out in more, you know, normal, where you aren't really able to give expression to that hunger or even to find fulfillment for it. So.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what happens next?
What happens next?
Yeah.
I graduate.
Good for
by
you.
By a wing and a prayer, and I head to Bethel University.
here in the Twin Cities.
Here in Minnesota. And I kind of, you know, I went into Bethel University, a pretty conservative college, as a conservative, expecting to, you know, become a worship leader or maybe a pastor in one of those mega churches that within the evangelical realm, and live my dream.
Yeah, and that was your dream. Ministry was your dream.
Yes,
at this point.
Yeah. Yep. And what I found was a kind of a culture that was focused on a spirituality that I became less and less comfortable with. And I started, I'm very skeptical by nature. I mean, Enneagram 6 to a T, for those who are Enneagram friendly. And I questioned a lot of things. And I realized that my faith was kind of a Jenga tower. Like, you take off these pieces, and the more you take off, the ricketier it gets. Ricketier is not a
it's
word.
All right. It's all right. Neologisms are permitted on this podcast.
and it, you know what? Like, at right there at Bethel, it all came tumbling down.
Which is interesting. That's an interesting context in which it would come tumbling down, right? Because presumably, that environment would largely support, at least I would assume, maybe I'm wrong about that, but would at least support most of the more conservative evangelical theology you're coming with. So, like, where did you encounter the voices that started to, like, remove the pieces of the Jenga tower, or were they just inside of you, or what?
I think I just started to evolve in my understanding of science and in my understanding of like human sexuality and in my understanding of just what, like, these evangelical communities can sometimes be, you know, circled around. And I just started questioning and questioning and questioning, and the answers that I received were
insufficient.
Exactly.
Huh.
Exactly.
How, let's see. How long, like, are you able to map out chronologically that process? Like, was it really instantaneous that this happened, or was it over a year or years? Or how would you?
I would say it was, like 2 years of, like, holy crap, what's happening? And then 2 years of, where do we go from here? you know? And so it was in the 4 year time. And I knew that there was something that I knew that there was a God pulling me forward in some way, but I knew that also the God that had been spoon-fed to me for years, and even in some of the churches that I worked at post-college, that God kind of just looked like Sean Hannity, you know? And I knew that, and I fought against that as much as I could, which also like kind of kept me from truly experiencing God, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to think of how to phrase this, but did you find some helpful companions on the journey, did this feel to you like kind of a solo road?
It can feel really isolating, but as you make friends that are open to having conversations like that, you can always find community in those regards, but sometimes in like evangelical contexts, it can be really isolating because it seems like everybody thinks the way that, that everybody, it can feel like everybody in these evangelical contexts think one way and are threatened by the way that you think, you know?
And there's probably some degree to which that's true and some degree to which it's untrue, and where it's just sort of everyone's performing a script, right?
Exactly.
Which makes sense. It's a human thing.
Exactly.
But you have to, in some ways, you almost have to like scratch through that underneath the surface, and there you find all kinds of interesting things.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And I think that's super appropriate, because the idea that we all kind of build this narrative, right, of what we're seeing and what we're perceiving, and it can be so true to us, and it can feel like that is the be all end all, and when the truth is we're really all just trying our best, right? You know?
Yeah, it's, you know, those are difficult realities to navigate. And so Bethel, and then you graduated from Bethel.
Graduated from Bethel.
And what was sort of the road after that?
I went straight into ministry.
Wow.
Even in the, you know, with all of my deconstruction that happened, I was still definitely...
You were still on that path.
Absolutely. And
questions in hand.
Questions in hand. Just kind of picking up pieces and like, what do I have? You know, and I don't know. I'm always reluctant to use the word like calling, but I just felt a pull towards ministry at all times. And I think, I feel like that was just the way that my life was kind of like magnetically drawn to.
Yeah.
And so I started worship leading at a small Lutheran church, which I was there for 3 years. And I learned how to do worship leading professionally, because like being a professional Christian is something different than being a Christian, right? Like, and it's there are so many fine lines and so many interesting aspects to that can kind of muddy the waters, but also in some ways they can strengthen your journey as well.
Yeah. So I'm interested in you mentioned a reluctance to use the language of call. How, dig into that a little bit. Like what is that internal check that you have in your heart around that language?
That the check is because of kind of these evangelical culture philosophies that kind of overuse, you know, what God is calling people to do. You know, the idea that, well, I'm here, so obviously God is calling me here, you know, which kind of eliminates the idea that you're somewhere God doesn't want you to be.
Oh, as an option.
Yeah. 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 And I think sometimes God calls us. God is always calling us to follow God more closely. And also, sometimes the decisions we make are based on how we can serve God better. And sometimes God, I think, I just believe that God gives us the freedom to be able to move forward prayerfully and intentionally. And also, I don't know. I think there's a bit of a using the Lord's name in vain sometimes with using calling language.
Yeah. So there's a sort of holy hesitation, I guess you could say, when you use, it's not just that you're trying to be overly skeptical. You have a, maybe fear isn't quite the right word, but a reverence for how you use God language.
Yeah. For example, I've served at three churches, so I've left two churches, and both times I felt the temptation to say, God is calling me to this new place, because it would make it seem more legitimate to the listeners. Right. Sometimes the decisions to leave have been based on, you know, prayer and careful discernment, where I felt like this is how I can serve God better. But I just feel like there's a temptation to say, God is plucking me out of here and putting me over here, you know?
Yeah. As if you don't have any sort of input into the, into the process.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, okay, your first church was a Lutheran church.
Lutheran
which
church.
Which is so interesting coming straight out of Bethel. I mean, at least it strikes me as kind of interesting. How did that come about?
I was just looking for a place to lead worship.
Yeah, okay.
You
and
know?
This was the first, this was an opportunity that emerged.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely church. It was a place that was looking to kind of bridge the gap between traditional and contemporary, which is a theme in my entire career.
Yes, right. We're going to talk about that more.
Yep. And yeah, I worked there for 3 years and just kind of learned how to lead a band of volunteers. Mm-hmm. I was like 23 and I was the youngest person in the band. And that's a whole new dynamic that I've never experienced. Yeah. And just kind of navigating how to provide enough resources for a bunch of volunteers, but also give them a chance to grow on their own and express their musical ability as well, and kind of learning that balance. Yeah. And I learned a lot of lessons.
I believe it. I believe it. Sounds like it. Yeah. What was church number two?
You took
a second calling.
Yep. And I ended up at an evangelical church for 3 years that I loved. And ultimately I learned during that time I was ready to come out of the closet. Mm-hmm. I thought that this church, based on its the wording on its website saying that all are welcome, I was like, this looks like a church that I could probably come out in. And so I and it looked like a great job as well. So I took it, and within a month I realized this is not a safe place to come out.
Oh, within a month of starting your
oh yes
yeah, wow.
So I knew that like from the very beginning that it was like, okay, this is going to get complicated at some point. Also, I believe in ministry, and I believe in worship leading, and I believe that this is the place where I can take the next step in serving a community through worship leading.
Yeah. So if that conversation internally for you was happening on the front end, you ended up, you were there for some a little bit of time more. So that, talk a bit about that process of sort of living there with this kind of secret, or with this kind of emerging, kind of new emerging sense of sexuality.
Yes.
Like what was, talk about that journey. And
whoo boy.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot. And you have a blog entry here on this too, a little bit, right?
Yes.
On Worship Forward.
Yeah. On my blog, Worship Forward, I have a post called I'm a Progressive Working in a Conservative Church.
Help. Now, let's just be clear. There is a particular picture as well of a person whose hand is reaching up from the ocean.
It's a little dramatic.
It's dramatic. Yeah.
But it can feel that way.
Right.
You know, you can become so consumed with the idea that you are the only person feeling this. And that's how it felt sometimes. So I cover a lot of this story in that post.
Yeah. Ultimately, you decide to leave.
Yes.
And maybe you don't have to tell the entire story because we can direct people to the blog post.
Sure.
But maybe just hit some of the highlights about that departure process and then your new call here at Lord of Life.
Yes. So, first of all, loved the job. Loved the community. Yeah. I got to grow in my musical ability and in my worship leading skills, like, every week.
That,
like,
was a much larger church, I think,
yep,
than your initial call.
Yep. It was a bigger church. It was, there was no, what's interesting is that the church before that, it was mostly traditional, and then we were trying some new music, and so I was, like, bringing them that way. And then I started this new church, and it's all contemporary music, and I find myself bringing in some hymns. What a journey. And were you gonna say something?
I was just gonna say, so many different streams though feeding into you. I mean, you were born and raised Catholic, so presumably you had some encounter with hymns and more like traditional churchy,
yep,
music. And then the worship band stuff in high school, and then presumably you encountered a lot of contemporary worship at Bethel.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the Lutheran church, they tried to sort of bridge that a little bit, bridge, mm-hmm, those two worlds out, but now you're in like a fully contemporary worship setting.
Yes.
Which really is, we're going to talk about this later, but is dominated by evangelicalism. I feel like,
totally,
the mainline really does not have a lot of strong songwriting, contemporary worship leading voices.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are some, but I just think it's dominated by evangelicals.
Absolutely.
And charismatics and Pentecostals and whatnot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's so much of this that get wrapped up in preference and this strange war between traditional and contemporary, yeah, you know, styles. And it's like we have centuries of musical dialogue to pull from, right?
Right.
To deny any of that would be a mistake. We have, mm-hmm, to embrace that we come from somewhere, but we have to know that we're going somewhere as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm at this church, and really having a great time musically, growing in the community, loving it, realizing more and more each year that that I am bisexual, and, mm-hmm, this is something that I know that God created in me and that God ordains in me and that God loves about me. And I, you know, after a while of being ready to kind of get back into the dating world, you know, it was, I was like, this is going to hit the fan at some point, you know? And I found an amazing man that I'm still with now. And this is a God-centered, loving relationship. And as soon as it was like, okay, this is serious, this is real, we're going to have to face this at church. And what I learn about this denomination over time is that, you know what, there's some people in this denomination that are fighting for inclusion of LGBTQ people, and everyone at the top is just tamping it down.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I am, this is 4 years into this job, I start to, like, how do I do this perfectly? You know, like, how can I do this flawlessly? Which, of course, is impossible. But I want to at least cover my bases so I give this the very best shot possible for having them learn who I am and embrace me as part of their community. And so I meet with a few pastors that are also part of this denomination confidentially. And we sit down and I'm like, how do we move forward with this? How do we, you know, how do I do this in a way that respects the denomination that has so much potential for good and yet continues to choose exclusion? And so I kind of build my case, and I'm kind of just waiting for the go-ahead.
How are those conversations? That's a fascinating approach to this, to this situation that you found yourself in, to first kind of approach these other pastors. How did those conversations go?
They were exciting and also pretty depressing. You know, exciting because I knew that there were other pastors who were wanting to take a step forward for LGBTQ inclusion. But also the amount of power that they would have to fight against was overwhelming. And so it was kind of like, we need more people to step up and say this, but looks like everyone who stepped up so far has kind of gotten kicked out. So, you know, it was really something. It was a really, really strange experience.
I'd imagine so. And so ultimately you ended up leaving that church, or you want to maybe tell that?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I felt like I'm going to give them a chance to accept me. But I felt like the responsible thing to do for myself was to line something up. You know, I'm not going to, you know, like, they have the power to not accept me, but I don't like the idea of them having the power to make me unemployed. You know, like, it's like for this reason. And so I was like, I'm going to protect myself, and I'm going to look for something. So I'm going to reach out to all my pastor friends and say, hey, here's my situation. Probably going to get kicked out of my church. I want to lead worship somewhere. I want to continue. And the very first person that I want to reach out to is Pastor Joel, who works here at Lord of Life. And we worked together at my very first call.
Oh, at the Lutheran church?
Yeah.
The first call. Oh, fascinating.
So he, and so, and I left, like, not because of him, like, I left because I wanted the next step, but I was like, I hope that Joel and I get to cross paths again. And so I'm like, I'm going to email him, I'm going to email all these other people, I'm just going to, you know, it was like a morning, and I was like, when I get to work, I'm just going to send this email quick. And before I leave for work that day that I decide to reach out, I get a call from Joel saying, hey, I'm looking for a full-time worship leader.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Remarkable timing.
It was, I was like, I was going to email him that afternoon. Like, it was like this, there was, it was one of the first times I've felt like a real path was being paved. Like, it, especially in a community and a situation in which that I felt could only end badly. Suddenly I had this kind of, I felt affirmation that I was not alone in this.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. This is actually a good inflection point for us. I want to ask you one more kind of retrospective question and a reflective question, and then I want to kind of transition over to some kind of your thoughts on worship leading.
Sure.
But now, kind of looking in the rearview mirror, how do you see God at work in that that process of kind of discovery, self-discovery, and departure? Like, how do you see the Spirit at work in that?
I see it's so hard in the moment sometimes to see actual things happening, you know, from the Spirit. And because you can be so consumed with the mess. And I think I'm not sure I would have called it faith at that time when I was, I called it survival, really, knowing that I had to face this rejection at some point. I knew that the right thing to do was to give my community the best shot they could at accepting me and also knowing me. You know, and I did what I could to kind of lean on friends and lean on people who can support and just hope that what I'm doing is as honoring to God as possible and honoring to the identity that God gave me. And in that, it feels so, it can feel so dark and it can feel so scary. And what I learn looking back is the Spirit gave me strength in ways that I can't claim as my own.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's, for me, it's very powerful. And it's a reminder that that inner resource that the Spirit gives is with us and reachable at all times. And I think that's it.
Yeah. 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 Thanks for going into some detail there. I know it's a lengthy story, but yeah, I encourage people to read the blog post though.
Yes.
So let's transition now over to kind of some of these newer boundaries that I think you're pushing into. Why don't you kind of describe in really broad terms what some of those frontiers that you're trying to, some of the big questions that you're living with right now, and maybe some of the big challenges that you're living with that are maybe, of course, reflected here contextually, but then also in the broader world of like people who are trying to do new things in Christian worship. So
yes, I think the most interesting dynamic for me is that as someone who's worked in progressive and conservative churches, it seems like for someone who is a progressive and also stylistically current,
right?
Yeah. There's nowhere to go.
Right? It does seem that way.
Like, because right? You go to like the churches that have the coolest, most current music that is so engaging and so exciting tend to be conservative, and then the churches that are progressive tend to have the most outdated music. And so you gotta pick your poison somewhere. And I think that so much of this comes down to like preference and tradition and being willing to upend some of this is part of my ministry now. Because I now find myself in a majority progressive church, where, you know, if I wanted to get married tomorrow, I could get married tomorrow, right? Like, right. Like, and that's amazing. And we're within the ELCA, and just the mainline church, which needs a little bit of help when it comes to like worship. Mm-hmm. And, I wonder if, I wonder if there's so much cerebral, like mind-centered worship here, and there seems to be less body-centered worship.
Huh.
And I wonder if, and I feel like the evangelicals can kind of lean into that body, that gut feeling a little bit more.
Kind of a visceral sense of God's presence. And
yeah, and just imagine how unstoppable worship could be if we could tap into all of that, right? Like if not only are we using our minds to understand to the best of our abilities, you know, which we just knock out of the park all the time at church, right? In the main line, but also we could feel in our like soul and and in our guts that the presence of God.
Well, and I'm glad you use the language of the presence of God, because I think I also have a pretty deep evangelical background as well, and Pentecostal and charismatic. And I think when you're in these circles, it's really common for people to say, I really felt the presence of God in that worship service or in that sermon. There was just when we did that song or in that particular moment, I really felt the Spirit. And I have no reason to deny that that's fake, right? Like, and it happens all the time, and you hear people use this kind of language, mostly in sort of evangelical charismatic circles. And so part of what I hear you saying is that you would like for people also to have these kinds of experiences through music and in worship in the mainline, at least as a more regular part of their experience.
Yes. And just better music in general would be nice.
So there's a sort of music quality thing too. Here.
Yeah, because there's, you know what, like, you, as a worship leader, especially like in the contemporary realm, and okay. every time I say contemporary, let's just imagine air quotes because okay, that sure, word is so sure. loaded, okay, right? Yeah, but it's like true. Also so common, and you know, so as a worship leader in the contemporary music realm, when you're looking for new music, there's so much crap that you have to sift through, mm. right? But there, and some people stop there, you know?
They just get frustrated with the sifting
yeah, part. Screw and, yeah, screw it. You know, let's go back to what we've known and let's just play Canticle of the Turning right. for the next 60 years.
Right.
Not that Canticle of the Turning is bad. I'm just saying.
Right,
it's not
right,
the
right.
only, it's, you know. But there really is some good stuff out there. And there's some stuff that... there are some songs that can really elevate a worship experience in ways that kind of honor the time that we're in and can really bring people into the presence of God.
Yeah. Why you know? Is it? And I really don't have I don't even have an emerging answer to this question, but why is it that people are drawn toward contemporary music? Like, what is it that... whether it's stylistically that many people just feel like I experience Jesus in the spirit more through that than I would through, say, like, whatever, choose your hymn, you know, mm. from the ELW or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What's your sense of?
I think part of it is formulaic. You know, if you yeah. build like the, you know, Hillsong is doing something with right. the way that they structure their songs.
And they have been for decades.
Yes.
Since the 80s even, maybe even late 80s.
Yeah, and the way that they just structure these to build in a certain way,
right.
that does bring, like, an emotional reaction. Right. And that can be good and bad, yeah. you know? Like,
and sometimes the lyrics are quite powerful.
Exactly.
Often quite powerful, but simple.
Yes.
Often very simple.
Yeah, and I just think that there's a lot to it. And I think we should try to approach, we should have the same high standards for contemporary music as we do with like traditional stuff, sure. right? Like we should, just as there's like plenty of crap in contemporary music and some really amazing gems, there are some real clunkers in the Cranberry hymn book,
yes.
you know, and it, yeah. just because it's there and it's bound in the pages does not mean that it's that right. it can be a that it can be a useful tool in worship, mm-hmm. you know. And that's something that I do here. Like half of the music that I do is hymns, mm-hmm. Because I know that it's so meaningful for people, and it's so meaningful for younger people too, who want to feel rooted in some sort of tradition. We don't play them on an organ. I write arrangements for them that they are, you can pick up a hymnal and sing along, but also it sounds fresh and new and exciting. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, the songs, one of the posts in Worship Forward, I talk about worship songs being tools, not relics.
Oh, interesting.
You know, yeah. if we really want to protect the legacy of hymns, putting them into a glass museum case, you know, is sure. not what's going to do it. You know, we have to continuously, like, adapt them to what worship is now and where people
yeah.
are now.
Yeah.
In my philosophy.
Yeah. So we're kind of hovering a bit around the article on the six non-negotiables. But let
yeah.
me, before we get into those particulars, let me ask you a really big question. What do you think the purpose of musical worship is? Because I think that's in part what you get to in that, mm. in that blog post is, why are we worshiping in... I think you have an answer to that because I think your six non-negotiables point to something, mm-hmm. like a particular sort of theory mm. of what we're doing in worship. But I'd just like to hear you kind of articulate that in a broad sense.
I believe that God is present when we gather together yeah. in God's name, right? Because yeah. Jesus said it.
Yeah.
and,
good enough reason.
and I have an experiential knowledge
yeah.
of that kind of there's something that happens when we're together. Mm-hmm. And one way to kind of hone into the unity that we can feel together as one, as the body of Christ, is to raise our voices in song, mm-hmm. which can kind of remind us of what brings us together. Mm-hmm. And also, that's one. That was kind of more of a meta.
Sure. No, that's what we're going for, right? That's great. It's perfect. I love it. Yeah.
And I think what my first answer probably should have been to that is just that it's good to be reminded that we have reason to respond to God's blessing in our life.
We have reason to.
God is good, you know? Undeniably good. And God loves us and God is with us. And sometimes we can forget that God is pulsing through all of creation. Mm-hmm. And God is in the air that we breathe. And God is in our bodies and in all of the earth. And that's worth responding to. That's worth singing about. And sometimes, I mean, I tell every once in a while when we're kicking off worship on Sunday morning, I tell the congregation that during worship, God doesn't show up. We're the ones who show up. Mm-hmm. God is already here, and we just have to open our eyes and our ears and our hearts to God. So,
and music somehow helps us to do that.
I believe that music helps us do it.
Yeah.
There's something about it. There's something mystical about it, something experiential about it that I'm a little hesitant to try to put my finger on.
Yeah.
You know, similar to like communion, like as someone who went from Catholic to Lutheran to evangelical, what the heck
what
does
is going
communion
on here,
mean?
Right?
And it's just, and the more I try to nail it down, the more I get uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'm just willing to say, hey, you know what? I don't know, but it brings us together. And I feel like God is present somehow in this. Mm-hmm. And that is enough.
Yeah. No, thanks for that, Brian. Now, I want to read really quickly through like the headlines of the six non-negotiables.
Yeah.
And then I'd want to drill down and ask a couple questions about some particulars.
Yep.
Again, people can find this on worshipforward.blog.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So the first one is, does the song mention God? Yes, I am asking this is your words.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised on how many like songs don't mention God. Like, I mean, that's it. Like, they can allude to God, or they can they can kind of hint at the presence of God, and sometimes that's okay. Like, having, like, I'm not mm-hmm. saying let's eliminate mystery from this.
Sure.
But
you can talk about God without having God.
Exactly.
You sort of explicitly mention.
Exactly. But we need to be mindful about where that where this song kind of stands in that, because I think especially within, you know, at my church, an ELCA church, we are singing to a God. You know, like we're singing to
a particular
deity, divine presence, and I think that's important.
Yeah. Now, number two, are you singing to or about God? So we're playing with some prepositions here.
Yes.
Talk about kind of your reasoning here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people could read this and maybe this could be a somewhat controversial point. So perhaps, but we'll see.
Yes. And this is something that I kind of, sometimes I go back and forth on, because I know some people that are like, a worship song should only be to God, or, and they, not even, like, even songs like about God, think of, hang on, I just had it. Can't wait for you to edit this out. This is going to for the next half hour, Brian tries to think of a song. All Hail the Power of Jesus' Name.
Oh, sure. Right.
Right? Like that great song,
and
which
that
I believe is a great worship song.
And that Chris Tomlin does a version of, I think.
Yes.
Right? Like he did.
And it's about God.
Right.
And some people believe that, like, all of the worship should be directly sung to God, which I think is really helpful. I also think that sometimes there are some great songs that sing about God, so I think that's fine. So my two standards personally are the song needs to be to God or about God.
Okay.
There are also some strange songs that exist in the world that are used for worship that are sung from the perspective of God.
As if the congregation were sort of embodying the voice of God.
Yes. Right. And one, like, the biggest example that, like, is so controversial in this Lutheran world is Morning Cry, which is, like, Christian sriracha, right? Like, it's just, like, it goes on everything. Baptisms, funerals, confirmations, weddings.
That's a funny analogy.
You know? And like, I can see how people have found this song, like, really meaningful. And that's great. I don't think it should be sung in worship.
Huh.
Because it kind of creates this dynamic where we're singing to God as God to us, and it's too confusing for my worship brain.
No, I don't have any dog in the fight with regard to Morning Cry, but I wanted to just raise a small question here, and that is, like, so I teach Old Testament, and part of what you see in the prophets is that part of their role is in fact to speak as God, and so they will embody the voice of God as part of their prophetic role, because the idea is that they're kind of a messenger, you know, that's like, I've heard this from God, and now my role is to speak that as if it were the voice of God. And part of me wonders if there may be times when you'd want to say, church, you actually have a prophetic voice. And that there might be an opportunity. I'm not saying all the time, but there might be special opportunities where a person might want to say, let's remind ourselves that the church has a voice that God has called us to use in the world, and that part of that voice is to say, we believe that God is actually speaking into this situation. Go ahead. You can push back, but I just want to hear. That question came up in my mind as I was reading your comment there.
That is the best pushback I've received on this.
I think it's more just a footnote than a pushback.
No, I think that totally makes sense. And I think I can see how, like, if we were able to set the table that way.
Yeah, you'd have to take a little bit of table setting.
You know? Yeah, because what I'm really encouraging here is, like, put thought into not only how we, like, what songs we bring to the table, but how we introduce these songs, how we, you know? And I think, you know, I'm not saying that we should never sing a song that is from, written from God, right? Not written from the perspective of God.
Right.
Because those songs would be great during, like, a meditative moment, like, even during, like, communion or, like, special music offering. It's mostly about how we set the table.
Yeah, I think that, I know different worship leaders. I interviewed Sarah Renner, who is at St. Andrew's, my home church in Matamida, and we had a lot of conversations about kind of the setting the table stuff and sort of the worship leader's pedagogical and sort of role. And I told her that in my experience of charismatic worship services, I was often deeply moved by what happened between the songs.
Yes.
Like those transitions. And I have felt like, as I've been through different Lutheran churches, there's not a lot of thought that goes into it. Sarah is really good at those in-between spaces. And I just wonder about how your own sense of, like, how do you think about those spaces in between songs? And yeah.
Totally. I think there was a pastor that I worked with who told me that transitions are as important to the worship service as the main pieces. Yeah. And how do we... Like, we are kind of MCs, right, during worship? Like,
right.
We are guiding people from kind of room to room. And how
nice
do
image.
We continue to kind of carry that holy space through these different moments is really important. And just being mindful of it can, and being a willingness to understand, even in the moment of worship, that, hey, here's a place where things can just fall flat, but we're in a special heart moment, you know, here. How do we just kind of create that, the space to move, you know? That's not a very specific answer.
No. It's a difficult, sort of strange question, but
yeah.
No, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So let's see, I'll move on. What's the next point here? Is the song relatable?
Yes.
That's number three.
Oh, gosh. I don't...
And it says, this causes you to nix the most songs.
Yes, because there are... I think it's just... I think it can be kind of cheap songwriting to kind of assume that everyone's in the same spot. Mm. So my example for this, I didn't want... Like, I used Mercy Me's Word of God Speak, which
right,
is like
you said that,
a
yeah.
song that's not really in... not really used a whole lot anymore. So I was like... Maybe it won't offend as many people. But like the very first line is, I'm finding myself at a loss for words.
Right.
And the funny thing is, it's okay.
It's okay. Right.
That's kind of a strange assertion as we're singing this congregationally that everyone's kind of feeling this way.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You know what I'm saying?
I see what you mean,
so yeah. It's just those kind of things can, especially for people who really experience God in like a very like brain centered way, it could be like, I'm not feeling that.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling at a loss for words. And then like it can be distracting. And so how do we pay attention to the language that as many people as possible can kind of come along on this journey?
Yeah. You know? No, that totally makes sense. And then is the song playable? Or I would add singable. I always, as much as I appreciated much of what Chris Tomlin did, his songs are always so difficult for me to sing as a baritone.
Yep.
I always had to sort of make adjustments and whatnot. And so I always feel like that's an issue too, a very technical issue. But like, can sort of the most number of people actually sing this song?
Totally.
Do you think that's...
spend so much time trying to find the right keys for things.
It's an issue of key. Right?
Yes, yeah. Totally. And there's something that I found. I started experimenting specifically here with it because I knew that we were starting. I'm starting this ministry at Lord of Life kind of from scratch. And so I knew that we have to kind of build and like form this community as we go when it comes to experiencing contemporary music and worship. And I have a high voice. I'm a tenor.
Mm.
And I have a lot of songs where I'm just belting, and you know, a lot of these songs, you know, start off low and then jump an octave.
Like the range is pretty extreme.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I, when I introduce the song, and like for the very first time, I sing the chorus, and it's like high, and I can just kind of feel the air just get sucked out of the room as every dad who like doesn't sing, except maybe occasionally at church, is like, I'm never going to be able to sing that.
Yeah.
And so I say, and for all the people out there who have a lower voice, I want you to sing it down here. And I show them how they can sing it low. And I just say, wherever you find like a comfortable space, that's where you can sing. You don't have to try to sing up here with me. I'm not expecting that.
That's,
and just giving that permission has really changed the way people respond to these songs. And because I know that most of the people aren't professional singers. So how do we give them the permission to express their spirituality in this song in their own way?
Yeah. Wow,
you know,
that's interesting. And then your sixth one, which I think is really, really, there's some rich reflections here, is the song liberating in some way. And so I think that really gets to sort of gospel centeredness. Does the song free us? You know, would be another way of thinking. Does it somehow remove our chains? Maybe spin that out a little bit, what you mean by liberating here.
Yes, I think especially when we're going into a lot of this, like this contemporary realm, which is kind of monopolized a bit by evangelical ideas. We can really run into patriarchal language, kind of violent language, and like a wrathful God, or like war-like imagery, or like a kind of, I don't know, there some things that are not so helpful in communities that aren't just like white patriarchal spaces, you know, and how do we pay attention to that, and how do we kind of like learn that sometimes a song can be super catchy and super problematic, mm-hmm. and maybe it's worth abandoning that, you know? Mm-hmm. And or can you update lyrics in a way that will help it be more appropriate?
Yeah, I have wrestled with the wrathful God stuff. Partly, again, I teach Old Testament, right?
Sure.
So there's, I sort of am living in a lot of these questions frequently, and part of me thinks that I would not be entirely comfortable wanting to kind of exclude as a batch songs about the wrathful God. And part of it is actually, I think, grounded in a similar impulse that you have to be inclusive, because I think wrath and anger over things that are unjust are a deeply human experience. And I don't know if I would ever want to deny people the opportunity to see, like, wait a second, this is a point at which my wrath meets up with God's. Like, because I would imagine when God looks out at the world, God has very similar reactions to how people are mistreated and how the earth is mistreated and whatnot. And so why would we not want to have that reflected in our worship? What thoughts there? Any ideas?
That's fascinating. Yeah, I think that's, again, how do we set the table?
Yes, I agree with you. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Because at best, like, those words can be embraced by the congregation with what you just explained. Like, this is another way that we can kind of understand how God is with us and for us and in this with all of the like the things that we feel God also feels, right? That's right. Legitimate and great. At the worst, it can kind of bring in this strange, like, militaristic, nationalistic idea that's also really prevalent in church cultures. And so how can we be mindful about the way that we introduce these kind of ideas? And I would venture to think that it has to be very carefully.
Yeah, I think you're right about the setting the table piece, though, because you really can't, like, the Psalms themselves, if you consider them sort of Israel's hymn book, are full of language about all kinds of sort of quote unquote negative type things, but they're also kind of also reflecting their own reality that they live in. And so, but I do think you're right about kind of you, that's where you as the worship leader also become like the host of the meal, or at least need to become the host of the meal. So,
yeah, that's really, I think that's super interesting. I think, I tend to just avoid those. just because sometimes I'm not willing to do that work to be able to explain all this. And also I'm not, I don't have a master's in divinity or, like a theological degree. So it's one of those things that I would want to work in collaboration with a pastor for.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think as long as we're kind of paying attention to, I just think we can get seduced by catchy songs.
I think that's true.
And then it's like, and then it can be, we can be pushing regressive theology, like, accidentally. And that's, and as long as we are paying attention to and really caring about those, the words and what messages we're actually sending in our music, I think that's what makes it a non-negotiable.
Yeah. Well, Brian, this has been so fascinating. I wonder, is there anything that we kind of didn't cover that you really wanted to hit on?
I'm not sure. I think there's a lot that is discussed in Worship Forward. Yeah. And we, I could talk about worship all day. So I love it.
Right.
So
but nothing that sort of stands out to you that, oh, we really needed to talk about that. Feel free to take a minute. It's okay.
Yeah. I just want to give you full freedom to, if there's anything that I said that is unhelpful.
No, it's
feel
good.
Free to cut it right out. That's totally fine.
No, I think it's interesting. I would maybe also, just as a final word, point people to the article Traditional versus Contemporary and that conversation by starting a new one. I do think that's an old, I mean, literally, like, probably has been happening since the Jesus movement in the
70s. Oh, man.
You know, which, you know, it's kind of remarkable. I think history will look back on really like the 1970s on up to the even now as one of the most remarkable moments in Christian music history. Like it is incredible. And part of that's a wedding of technology and sort of revivalistic movements and a whole lot of other stuff. But we really live in a pretty interesting moment from a Christian music perspective.
Totally.
But unfortunately, that the tensions have been named as like sort of contemporary and traditional. But I appreciate that you're trying to sort of reframe that story.
Yes. Yeah. I just the more I got into conversations about that, it just came down to preference. And it was I don't think that's really helpful. I think that some of the most powerful songs we have are hymns. And also some of the most powerful songs that we have are like contemporary songs. And I think that when we can kind of understand that it's not an either or, and that that kind of separation doesn't bring, I just don't think that brings like a cohesive feeling of worship, because we are rooted in so much tradition. And why not? Why deny that? Yeah. Because it can be such a gift. And I think, yes, that you'll find in that post that it's a very much a all kind of inclusive. Both have their fair share of crap, and both have some really amazing songs that would be really tragic if we just threw them out, you know. And so why not lean into it, even though people like to argue about it.
Brian, you've been generous with your time. Thank you so much. Where can people track you down? Just as a reminder.
Yeah, you can read my blog at worshipforward.blog. Okay. It's a resource for progressive, innovative worship leaders. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have an online presence for that very soon. It's a very new resource. So I'm just trying to...
Beyond worshipforward.blog, there will be something else coming.
Correct. Okay. I'm looking to put together a Facebook group where worship leaders who are interested in this kind of thing can kind of share ideas and discuss these different kinds of ideas of worship.
Yeah, I imagine you'll probably get a pretty good following. You'll be able to really host an interesting conversation. We might have to check in a year or so and just kind of see how that project goes, because I bet that will take.
I'd be happy to. It's kind of a niche. It's a niche group, not only worship leaders, but progressive worship leaders who, you know, and so tell your friends if you know someone who'd be interested. I'd love to hear from them. So
thanks, Brian.
Thanks so much.